Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report, a Friday episode, which means we're almost done with another week. But unfortunately for most of us, weekends don't really matter. They're the exact same thing. But I am excited for Friday for a different reason, and that is that we are once again joined by the host of the Happy Half Hour, Brett Ehrlich. Welcome to the stream.
I'm excited to be here, John. Everything worked out technically. My face, I just want you guys to know that I did eat something at a chocolate factory that has changed my skin. It will probably change my skin tone throughout the telecast. Just
in a
because
random color.
I'm at my wife's computer and, you know, she's sleeping and I will wake her up throughout this broadcast. But I do apologize for whatever. It's not coronavirus. It's definitely I ate a fizzy lifting drink or something. I don't remember. The snozzberries did taste like snozzberries, though.
This actually happened on House. I think you took too much niacin and you ate too many carrots.
Yep.
By color theory, you've created your face. She's still asleep? Wow.
Yeah, I do. She was up late probably because I snore so loud. I would like to add, Happy Half Hour will be airing an episode today, and it is a Viral Video Film School takeover of the Happy Half Hour in a time when we cannot really, like, figure out the live stream because there's too many other live streams to figure out. What we decided to do was just rewrap old episodes of the Webby Award-winning Viral Video Film School. Today's will be Democracy Disasters. From any time between 2008 and 2012, we get a flip-flop from Dick Cheney, master of disinformation, as well as some of my favorite local campaign ads of all time.
Awesome.
It'll be fun. Pour yourself a drink
like
and
fun.
Enjoy.
And just really fast before we get into it, and thank you for everybody who's starting to watch the stream already. Is it going to, like, do you think in a week or two, if we're still in this thing, you're going to be doing sort of remote Happy Half Hours?
Couple things. Friday post game is we need to figure that out. If we don't figure out Friday post game, we'll do this for the second half hour of it. And then I don't know, for Happy Half Hour, I've kind of built something like this for that, but I can't reliably program that out yet until everything settles into place with main show. So hopefully soon.
Okay. And maybe not live, maybe filmed and then upload or something.
Yeah, definitely. But it would be like a live stream feel. Like, I might just call you up, John, on a Thursday afternoon and be like, hey, I need a drink. You want to have one? And then we'll go through stupid things.
I apparently still have a couple bottles of rum from the wedding, so we can work through that.
Nice.
Before we jump into the news, and I will let you know, we're going to be talking, obviously, about the ventilator fiasco. We've got, interesting fallout from Florida's decision to have the primary a couple weeks back. We will have garbage people. It is a Friday, after all. And AOC on the floor of the House, some great comments there. But comments are already coming in with Wes Crosby saying, keep up the good work, John. Thank you, Wes. Very nice of you. Matthew says, John is a gangster. Keep it hood, blood. I don't know
that's
if that's
how I would
a sarcastic
it.
Comment.
I would describe
but,
you that way, 100%.
Well, that's how I've described myself in my Twitter bio for literally years. And it's finally catching on.
John is such a blood. He saw how blue my background image was and tried to turn my face red. Actually, it's not John's fault. I would like to point that out.
I could probably fix this in the stream.
Don't do it.
But I'm not
don't
going to. Because it's the apocalypse and, you know, not everything's going to work out. But anyway, thank you to everybody who's already in the chat. We will be reading your comments throughout and your super chats too, and please like the stream to help spread it. Anyone you can help bring in is very important in this time for keeping the show and the network sustainable, and so we really do appreciate that, and especially those of you who become members. That is just awesome and more important than ever. Okay, with that though, why don't we jump into the news? Yes, okay. Last night, Donald Trump was interviewed by journalist Sean Hannity, and he brought up his theories about New York City's stated need for more ventilators. They're saying they need thousands more. What does the president think about it? Let's listen.
But I have a feeling that a lot of the numbers that are being said in some areas are just bigger than they're going to be. I don't believe you need 40,000 or 30,000 ventilators. You know, you go into major hospitals sometimes, they'll have two ventilators. And now all of a sudden they're saying, can we order 30,000 ventilators? So, look, it's a very bad situation. We haven't seen anything like it. But the end result is we got to get back to work. And I think we can start by opening up certain parts of the country, you know, Farm Belt, certain parts of the Midwest, other other places, but...
Okay, so there, the most important part there, and we'll get into the other places thing, but the most important part there is New York City is saying, or New York is saying, that they need, you know, tens of thousands of ventilators, and I just don't think that that's true. That's what Donald Trump, scientist, diagnostician, medical expert, says. I guess they're just making it up. I guess they're just exaggerating.
It's not just him. It's also Dr. Deborah Birx today said that there are tons of extra ventilators just kind of lying around. We have 1,000 to 2,000 if they want them, they can claim them. And it's tough. You want to think, I don't know, there's something about her presence that makes me think, oh, I can trust her. And that's exactly why she's been chosen. That and she agrees with the president. But just because you've had, well, you have like 45,000 cases in New York.
Yeah.
You would assume that a certain percentage of those, especially when you look at the graph, that is our increase in cases is a steeper incline in cases than Italy and China both had.
Yeah.
So what's unfortunately happening is they are trying to cover for themselves by saying that it's not a big problem. Look, and then point at numbers that are old by definition. And two, I think the second thing, I guess, is they're just looking at numbers that are old by definition. They are trying to say that, look, not all ventilators are being used right now. Who are you to plan? But all the other people who are running these states are saying, I need to plan. That's my job.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for a while, and I'm not just trying to cover my own ass.
Yeah. The numbers, like you said, 45,000 cases, 519 deaths in New York alone. 134 people died in New York yesterday from this.
Yeah.
92,000 cases in the U.S., 1,400 deaths. And it's just shooting up. I remember yesterday I went to do a tweet updating the numbers, and the numbers were right at 69,000, so I decided not to do it. I decided to wait. And now we're at 92, and it's been less than a day since that. But Trump still, in that interview with Sean Hannity, was bringing up his, in a couple weeks, we're probably going to be good. Really fast on that doctor that you mentioned, Dr. Birx. If you at home aren't sure if you should trust her, here's a quote from her earlier today. Trump is so attentive to the scientific literature and the details and the data. I think his ability to analyze and integrate data that comes out of his long history in business has really been a real benefit. So I think maybe not, maybe not 100% trustworthy. Maybe she's trying to get in good with Donald Trump.
He's a marketer. He's good at marketing, and that's literally all he's good at. He's excellent at marketing. He might be the best ever at marketing, and I'm willing to give him that, but you can't market your way around all these data points. And it's, if I want to give Trump the benefit of the doubt, he's doing something that itself is absolutely maddening. Maybe he's trying to tell the stock market that there will come a time soon when things are back to normal. It is frustrating to observe that dynamic because these stock managers and all these business people are you think of them as titans of industry and people that are very, very strong and smarter than us and better than us. But if they just need some president to go, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. That itself is absolutely terrifying, but maybe that's what he's doing. But they need to take a step back and look at what the effect of his decisions would be. If he's sending certain parts of the country back, it's not like those parts of the country are absolutely quarantined from other parts of the country.
Exactly.
It might be that they're under-tested and more people in those regions have it than anyone knows, but they haven't gotten the testing on time to really identify the problem. And if you're sending everyone by Easter back into churches to all drink from the same cup of the blood of Christ, mouth to mouth, unless Jesus's blood is ever clear and 160 proof, more people are going to get sick.
Yeah. I don't think they do it mouth to mouth directly.
Well, it's not mouth to mouth, but like I went to Catholic school and it's just like, hey, it's weird. My wife That's has true. Wine from last night on her desk. It's yeah, like, hey, night.
That is not
terrible, but it's like, hey, and then then someone takes a thing and then they drink and then they wipe the glass with a cloth and give it to the next person.
Yeah, not a good call, not sanitary. Let's go to a little bit more of Donald Trump from last night, more on the need for New York and other states saying that they need more ventilators and they need them soon.
And I get along with most of the governors. I don't like it though when some governors, I mean, you know, I mentioned two of them, But some of these governors, you know, they take, and then they complain. They take, and you do a great job. You build them a hospital. You do other than that, they're always complaining. So I don't like that. But
yeah, so there have been a lot of, like, every day, there's a quote where I say, nope, that's it. That one quote, you can't be president if you say that. That thing that I just played for you, we're in the middle of a pandemic. We're gonna shoot past 100,000 cases today. Maybe we'll hit 2,000 deaths within a full day. And he said they take when he sent New York 400 ventilators, apparently. And then they complain about it. They're just whining. I built them a hospital. What more do they want? Probably they want to not have 40, 50, 60,000 cases of coronavirus in the country simultaneously or in their state. Probably incredibly worried about the number of people that are dying. What would you want out of your governor? If you were, let's say, like, if you're a Trump supporter, you live in Alabama, you want your governor to take it seriously, right? Like, if he thought he needed X number of ventilators, should he advocate to get X? Or should he accept 5% of X and then just, you know, like, shut up about it? God, why are you whining? They built you a hospital. Let some people die. That is the message that's screaming from it. And once again, he congratulated himself again super fast in his remarks at the press conference yesterday. Someone broke it down where they had the printout, the transcript, and they highlighted every section that was him congratulating himself. And it was 25% of the total word count of his address was saying how good of a job he thinks he's done as we shoot past 100,000 cases.
Yeah. And it's not just for the governors to ask and be happy for 5%. It's that they have to be nice to him the whole time. Mm-hmm. They have to say, they have to genuflect. They have to say, oh, President Trump, you are doing such a good job. Thank you so much for every little ounce of what you're giving me. Thank you, sir. You're so great. And then turn around. And another frustrating thing is he said, I mentioned two governors there. One was Andrew Cuomo, I assume. The other was Gretchen Whitmer, who he didn't even mention by name. He called her the young female governor. I think you and I know who I'm talking about. And he was actually talking about her. And I don't think he knows who he's talking about, or else he would have used her damn name. Mm-hmm. She had to come back and she tweeted back at him saying, hi, President Trump.
Yeah.
That governor was me. And I very respectfully asked you for things. But and here's what I need. So you said you stand with Michigan. Prove it. I was talking to, we had our morning meeting for the main show, and Cenk was mentioning that that Whitmer is on, theoretically, you know, I guess rumored to be on Biden's short list.
Yeah.
So now, if you look at what Trump would be, and what you would assume Trump would be doing, having known him for 3 years as president, he is picking political fights with people that he thinks he has to be enemies with, yeah, in his reelection campaign. And so now, who has he picked fights against? He picked fights against Michigan. And he's going to try to drive a wedge with Michigan, who's had it bad enough, hard enough for the last 15 to 20 years with the auto industry.
Yeah.
And now it's going to be, oh, that might be Biden's VP if it goes there.
Yeah. And she said, by the way, I think in an appearance this morning, quote, what I've gotten back is that vendors with whom we've procured contracts, they're being told not to send stuff to Michigan. It's really concerning. I reached out to the White House last night and asked for a phone call with the president. So she seems to be implying there that people that they had already contracted to produce ventilators to sell to Michigan are being told not to ship things there. I mean, look, if she's making that up, that's insane. And
there's no way she's making that up.
Yeah, exactly. I have to,
especially because that's absolutely 100% in line with what Trump told governors to do in the first place. He kind of said, you guys are on your own. Go procure your own contracts.
Yeah.
So that seems to be what she did. And he then comes back at her by saying, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not even telling her. Behind her back, it seems that he's negotiating. So he's going back on it. Maybe he saw the negative PR from trying to tell them to go fend for themselves. It's just extraordinarily frustrating.
Alpha move there.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Fox and Friends apparently not bothered by the back and forth between Donald Trump and governors like Cuomo and Whitmer over the number of ventilators that they need last night. Donald Trump implying that they're either wrong or lying about their need. But Geraldo thinks that they should just be happy with what they get.
See, for instance, Andrew Cuomo saying 4,000 ventilators. What am I going to do with 4,000 ventilators? I need 30,000. Take the 4,000, Governor Cuomo. It's a start. I understand from Dr. Birx, Ambassador Birx, on the president's coronavirus task force that there are still available hospital beds in New York, still available ICU space and ventilators. I understand. It's my city has been hurt and people are really afraid. But let's get on the same page when it comes to telling the American people what we're doing and where we're going. This is not the time for partisanship, not the time for politics. Rally around the commander-in-chief. He's the wartime president. Let's win this.
There is so much that I hate in just that little video. The narrative that they want. Like, you have a narrative, you're supposed to create things to say around it to lead people in that direction. You're not just supposed to say, he's the wartime president, rally around the wartime president. It's the most bumbling, obvious version of their hope for what will happen. If Cuomo thinks they need that amount, it would be negligent of him, in the extreme, for him to just say, well, they gave me 400. I don't want to be a whiner in this time. That's insane.
But even still, if you're a Trump fan and you love that he's the negotiator in chief, the art of the deal guy, then you should also, if this ridiculous situation exists that Cuomo is overstating it, you should actually respect Cuomo because he's going in with a very intense first offer. Mm-hmm. It's just a cult of personality. It's just people looking for an excuse not to like someone and not to think. Yeah. And it's just an Ainsley Earhart. She's the worst. Later in that same interaction, she just literally repeats what Geraldo was saying. Take it and be happy with it. And that's all they're all looking for. Excuse me. That's all they're all looking for. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. She said at some point it was effectively let's stop playing the blame game. No, but that's the thing. Like, I'm not a Cuomo fan or Cuomo defender. He's not playing the blame game when he says, we don't have this thing we need that will stop people from dying. We need it. Give it to us if you can. Force companies to produce it if you can. All of that. Obviously, like, the idea that, they've just got thousands sitting around and he doesn't care to get them is insane. They just rolled out yesterday. They're going to be trying to split so each ventilator can work for two people. Who thinks that they're doing that just for the fun of it so that they don't have to, like, unpack thousands of ventilators that they have? They're prepping for an insane increase in the numbers. They want to keep as many people alive as possible. And this is one of those things where we've been criticizing the months of delay. This is one of those ones where I feel more sick because I feel like I'm standing, like, on the edge of a cliff looking out at what's going to happen. We know what's going to happen in a few days or in a week or in 2 weeks. They're trying to get prepared for it, and they're being attacked. And in a couple of weeks, if thousands of people die across New York City, Trump is going to be criticizing them. He's going to find something to attack them for why they weren't prepared when he is passing the buck in real time right now.
Yeah, the goal of Fox News is to separate people from reality and make them feel comfortable inside their own bubble. Unfortunately, with coronavirus, that kills people. That's it.
Yeah.
And they can't get their way away. They can't navigate their way away from reality and magically like inoculate folks.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating.
It's like this is the moment that hypothetically some of them could have exercised a bit of rational, independent thought. That, yeah. Like, Geraldo, who's criticized Trump before, no, it's just, he's the wartime president. Whatever he says goes, doesn't matter if he's lying.
That's not a bad instinct to have. Like, there's not a, it's not in itself a bad instinct to say, listen, we're all undergoing a crisis. We need to rally together. That's a good thing. And you know what? People do that naturally anyway. Most people in an easily identifiable crisis will rally around, and you'll see a bump for the leader, whoever it is, because people just need to be led. Some of them feel like they're doing their part by supporting the person in charge and putting what they might label their petty grievances aside. Unfortunately, yep. In this situation, and that's already happening, but you can't just blindly do that if the leader is an idiot. And yep. The leader in this case is Donald Trump, who we've learned for many years is an idiot.
Mm-hmm. An idiot and a liar. And incompetent, all of these things that you should never have in one of your leaders. But in a time of an emergency like this, it's even worse. Luck Dragon said, by the way, sorry for being salty. I'm just sick of being stuck on lockdown.
Peace I know, I life get it, man. I love it. You, it's entertaining. Yeah. I think we all understand you don't actually want to throw people into volcanoes.
Yes.
I think that goes, we're playing when we say that you think that. But.
Yeah, we're not at the this is Sparta-ing people into a caldera just yet. Geraldo looks like a knockoff Teddy Roosevelt, the Yumper said. The Herald says, please look into reporting that critically ill elders are having their respirators removed and given to younger patients in Spain. They are being left to die. If this is true, please help. There's a report. Apparently, it's not actually in effect yet, but there was a write-up for one hospital, I forget exactly where it was, about how they're going to triage ventilators. It was initially leaked as this is what they're doing right now. Apparently they've written it up for what might come, but yeah, I don't doubt that in some of the countries that are like per capita even harder hit already, that they will be making those sorts of decisions. It's a scarce resource. They don't have enough. In our country, we're not doing what's necessary to get enough, and so at some point you are going to be having to choose who gets it. One of the things that we need the most, obviously, is ventilators. Donald Trump has repeatedly said, I'm not going to obligate companies to produce it. I'm not going to use the sort of war powers that hypothetically we could use. And he's effectively said that it's on the governors to procure them when they've been saying, no, we need your help to do that as well. Some states simply can't do it or can't. They don't have the logistics to manage it. And now we find out that he's in some ways sort of getting in front of, in between the government and its plan to buy some of these. Take a look at this. The New York Times reported last Thursday that the Trump administration abruptly canceled its planned announcement of an agreement with General Motors and Ventec Life Systems that would allow for the production of as many as 80,000 desperately needed ventilators to respond to an escalating pandemic. According to Jake Johnson of Common Dreams, one of the primary reasons for the White House's decision to cancel the announcement, according to the Times, was the supposedly prohibitive price tag. That price tag? $1 billion, or 0.05% of the stimulus that was just passed.
Right,
that's
when this is
really
like,
high, though.
Mm. Yeah, when this is the primary way in which people are treated for the disease that's causing the whole damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. That's the one thing folks say
that
they need. Is it
worth $1 billion? Really? $1 billion? Is it worth it to save, you know, tens of thousands of lives?
It's insane.
Yeah,
it's insane. I mean, this is what we need, and these are the tough decisions that we need to make, and they need to be made now. And this is a solution. This is a solution. Provide it.
Yeah, yeah. The $1 billion for the 80,000 respirators, which by the way are needed right now and will be needed for future pandemics. That billion, we have. Our military has planes that individually cost more than $1 billion. Not for like all of the planes or to come up with the plane. A plane costs more than $1 billion. And that's why I tweeted this morning, like as an outsider, if I'm just watching the government's response and I'm trying to come up with what do they think the worst case scenario is in this entire pandemic, it seems like the worst case scenario for them is like in a year, we got all these respirators we don't need anymore. Like, oh, yeah. What are we going to do with them? Now, that's not a worst case scenario. If we end up having to pile up respirators in the Mojave Desert, I'm cool with that. And if, like, first of all, we won't. We will definitely need them. We could ship them around the world to help out other countries that are going to be hit by future things. Or we could save them for later. We have a stockpile of oil. Our stockpile of respirators is laughably, shamefully small. This is an opportunity to fix that for $1 billion. Who the hell cares about $1 billion?
And Alaska Airlines just got twice that. They were like, hey, Alaska, here you go. And they're still trying to make people like, hey, you know what you should do? This is what I hate about the bailout, is that like all the companies are still trying to find ways to furlough workers. Like they get $2 billion and that's ostensibly to use that money so that they can pay people who are not needed to come to work because Alaska, you know, curtailed their flights by 70%.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to like pivot around and say, hey, you guys should go find a way to get paid, maybe file for unemployment or something. Maybe you should take some paid leave. Mm-hmm. Oh, what, this? Oh, this is isn't $2 billion. This is a movie prop.
Yeah, and the Amazon sending out emails to all of its workers asking them to like either volunteer or give to charity. And it's like, you're the biggest company that there ever has been, and the richest guy ever. Like...
Yeah, and it's fine, and I'm fine with encouraging people to help out when you can, but also all these companies that are looking, this is a new version of something that's always happened, where you hear about McDonald's and Amazon telling their employees, here's how you supplement the insufficient income we provide with food stamps.
Yeah, 100%.
That's it. They're always doing that.
Yeah.
They are always trying to look for the government as a welfare program. The employers, not the employees. The employees do it because they have to. The employers use the government because it lets their CEOs and other corporate people take home more money.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully people are watching. I hope. And seeing things like the Facebook email asking people to contribute to something. And they said, for every dollar you contribute, we will contribute two. Up to $10 million. And I thought, I know that to a regular person seems like a lot of money, $10 million. To Facebook, that's like the sweat off the brow. Ping!
Yeah.
You think Zuckerberg cares about $10 million? Like, don't send that email. That's just,
you know,
insulting.
What Zuckerberg
just give $10 million
about,
and don't say anything.
You know what I am 100% certain Zuckerberg cares about?
What?
What you think. What everybody thinks of him.
Well, I'm not happy.
Well, that's the thing. Make it loud. Say it clear. Make sure that he knows that you're upset with him, because the reason that they do that in the first place is because they want good PR. They think it's a good idea to say, hey, give me a dollar and or give them a dollar. We'll give two. Look at us. We're super benevolent. But if you point out that thing they were doing to make you like them more actually makes you more frustrated with them for the exact same reasons you've always been frustrated with them and they've never learned from, then he will continue to make it $3 with no cap. Who knows?
Yeah. Ridiculous. By the way, I saw this super chat from Jenna's Hidden Gems. It says, live in Wisconsin. My mom's a nurse and says they're not testing unless you're admitted to the hospital because there's not enough tests to test anyone else. Rural areas are extremely under-tested. And that's why we keep saying over and over, we're reading like the numbers of cases. That is not the number of people that have it. That's the number of people that have been tested and have it.
And
we have no idea how many people actually have it.
And that's not in a vacuum. Like Trump himself said, maybe the interstates, the states in the middle, those are the Midwest and other areas are things we can reopen soon. Well, not till you test them on the same level that people are getting tested in other parts of the country.
So Trump sent this tweet. General Motors must immediately open their stupidly abandoned Lordstown plant in Ohio or some other plant and start making ventilators now. Ford, get going on ventilators. Fast! And so that's fine. Okay. It's weird to put it that way, but yes, I wanted to put pressure on them. But so there's a few issues with it. So one is he could obligate them to do it. He's not going to do that. So understand that. Two, he had a deal to buy ventilators from them. They're apparently at least pausing on that, if not punting on it. Three, he's apparently putting pressure on some companies, perhaps GM, to not sell ventilators to Michigan when they're needed most. One of the biggest issues, though, and file this under there's always a tweet. So he just said they stupidly abandoned their Lordstown plant in Ohio. Well, back on May 8th, 2019, he tweeted this. I don't have the picture, but it's there. Great news for Ohio. Just spoke to Mary Barra, CEO of General Motors, who informed me that, subject to a UAW agreement, GM will be selling their beautiful Lordstown plant to Workhouse, where they plan to build electric trucks. GM will also be spending blah, blah, blah. And he's like, they're going to make so many jobs. It's just awesome. Congratulations. A year later, you are so stupid to do that. So stupid. And in a follow-up tweet today, he attacked Mary B. It's always awful with Mary B. When last year he was complimenting her for her amazing decision to close down that plant.
He is a child on record over and over again being the worst. Believe him when he says he's the worst.
Not too many weeks ago, we had the Florida primary. That was on a day where multiple states decided to go forward with primary voting, despite the fact that we already had a lot of reason to worry that people would become infected with coronavirus, perhaps spread it to other people. Some states shut it down, others went forward, and tragically, the DNC, multiple governors, Tom Perez, were perfectly fine with that. And we said at the time, you can go watch the videos, people are going to get sick as a result of this. We may never know exactly who, but it's going to be out there. And we were just a little bit wrong, because we do know who, apparently. There were two poll workers who spent Florida's primary day at precincts in the city of Hollywood have tested positive for coronavirus, according to the Broward County Supervisor of Elections yesterday. Steve Vancor, a spokesman, said, "We just don't know, did they contract it after or before? That's between them and their physician. It's just something that can't be known, at least not to us. We just felt it was important to notify the public and, of course, their fellow poll workers who were there." So we're gonna have more details on who they might have interacted with, but these are just the first to be identified have tested positive for coronavirus.
I would like to see the CDC like go work back and like try to figure out where all this came from. Like, where did the, okay, so we got two people who tested positive. Let's see if we can, we have many possibilities. One of the possibilities is the Safeway, but I'm not sure about that. The other possibility is the day we forced them to be around everyone in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm pretty sure that's what happened. Yeah. Is you can trace it back, and it's not like people didn't tell you.
And imagine, okay, this might seem unthinkable. Imagine, what if they'd postponed Florida? Okay? What? How much worse off would we be right now, really, honestly? Would anyone care? Presumably the people who've gotten it. But would anyone, like, would their lives be worse because they weren't able to vote in Florida and, you know, a couple of other places 2 weeks ago? Like, no, we would have the vote in a month. Hopefully we have more knowledge at least of what's going on right now. We could have set up remote voting, mail-in voting, that sort of thing. It was an insane, insane, cruel, reckless, heartless decision.
Well, you know, they didn't vote in Ohio, and that state is on fire.
That's true. I mean, everyone's talking about it. Who loves Ohio now?
Everyone's like, oh my God, Ohio really put the brakes on the electoral process in America. What are we going to do? That's our number one priority right now, is that stuff. Yes. So stupid.
Can I give you some more details on the workers? So that spokesman Vancor said the infected worker at the Martin Luther King Community Center was a greeter and would not have been required to come into near proximity or contact with any of the 204 voters who cast ballots at the precinct on election day. That person was and remains asymptomatic. The worker at David Park Community Center, though, was checking in voters and likely would have handled some driver's license for the 61 voters who showed up throughout the day. The worker is showing symptoms, said Vancor, who in the days ahead of the primary told reporters that poll workers were told to stay home if they were showing any symptoms of illness. He also said, we do not know if he was wearing gloves at the time. So yes, so if they were symptomatic, they should stay home. The issue was many people are not, but can still spread it. The issue also is, hypothetically, that person, I don't know if it's a guy, but I'll say he, that person could have gotten it on election day from a voter who already had coronavirus. Like, that, all of these things were clearly known and stated beforehand, and now it's like, well, like, I don't know how we could have possibly got it. Maybe just touching a bunch of people's filthy driver's licenses and then touching the next one without gloves.
Voting is the worst thing, not for democracy, it's great for democracy, but voting's the worst thing in combating a pandemic, because people have to be in the same place and they're touching the same things, they're near each other, you're creating a situation in which everybody interacts with everybody else. It is stupid to have done this, and folks are no doubt suffering the consequences.
Yeah. There's a press release, finally, from one of the offices saying that any of the thousands of people who voted at locations where the workers were present, quote, may wish to take appropriate steps and seek medical advice. Yeah, they should. The issue would be that if they became infected with coronavirus on that date, it's been a couple of weeks. They've almost certainly spread it to other people since then. Those people will have no idea where they got it from. The original people probably will have no idea where they got it from, if they even remember where they voted. The entire thing was such a disaster, and it was a disaster that was predicted, and now it's playing out. We'll see how many more of these stories we find out about in the near future.
We learned a lot. We learned that the guy in Florida on the primary, we learned that the guy who said Castro didn't have too bad a reading program isn't liked in Florida. Mm-hmm. Wow. Big lesson there.
Yeah. We have a super chat, by the way. Gina Jones says, I was a poll worker in Florida on election day in Hillsborough County at a small precinct. I am not experiencing any symptoms.
Good.
I'm assuming you're also not infected. It wasn't clear from that, but hopefully you are not. But no one should have been put in the position where they, if they were a worker, that they had to come in, that if they wanted to be able to vote, they had to expose themselves to it. It's hitting all over the place. Dumb. Did you see, by the way, Boris Johnson?
Yeah, Boris Johnson's got it. Prince Charles got it.
Yeah. Whew. And so, I mean, look, some of our elected representatives as well, it could go, he's the first world leader, although world leaders' wives have gotten it before. God, so many stupid people. Breaking news, the House has passed the stimulus bill, and probably by the time you see this, it will be signed into law. But before it passed in the House, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez took to the floor of the House to bring up some of her major issues with the legislation.
I represent one of the hardest hit communities in the hardest hit city in this country, Queens, New York. 13 dead in a night in Elmhurst Hospital alone. Our community's reality is this country's future if we don't do anything. Hospital workers do not have protective equipment. We don't have the necessary ventilators. But we have to go into this vote eyes wide open. What did the Senate majority fight for? One of the largest corporate bailouts with as few strings as possible in American history. Shameful. The greed of that fight is wrong for crumbs, for our families. And the option that we have is to either let them suffer with nothing or to allow this greed and billions of dollars, which will be leveraged into trillions of dollars, to contribute to the largest income inequality gap in our future. There should be shame about what was fought for in this bill and the choices that we have to make.
Gentlelady's time's expired.
And I yield.
So, look, she was expressing many of the same concerns that we've talked about throughout this week. And by the way, I've seen a lot of people spreading this video on social media. The reaction has been predictable. The sexist attacks against her, how dare she talk like that. And then, like, people pointing out, hey, Bernie Sanders voted for it. Like, you moron. She just said in the video the horrible choice that's being forced on people by this bill. If Bernie had voted against it, how do you think that would be portrayed in the media right now? If he felt like we needed a version of this that didn't have that massive multi-trillion dollar slush fund for corporations that the perhaps the most amoral, corrupt person in the country is going to be in charge of, how would they have presented that to the people?
And then look at the other side. It's like Lindsey Graham's complaints are that people who are on unemployment might make slightly more money by taking unemployment than by taking a job that forces them to like expose themselves to coronavirus. Mm-hmm. Like that's it. Meanwhile, this is a giant giveaway to corporations, some of which were like, oh, if you need a check on it, sorry, I'm not going to take the money. Mm-hmm. Boeing did that. If you're going to take some kind of stake in what I do with it, sorry, I don't actually need it. Like, what an insane way to be. All the people who need the money, who are going to get those unemployment checks, definitely need it. They're unemployed.
Yeah. Yeah, like the people who might temporarily make a little bit more money for a couple of months, they're hunkered down, unable to really leave their house and worried about getting coronavirus. And by the way, these people probably far more likely to not have insurance. And so they might be facing God knows how much in medical expenses in the very near future. God forbid they end up with a couple of $100 more per month. And Bernie Sanders had some great commentary on that in advance of the Senate vote. But look, I'm glad that we have representatives like AOC, saying what we're thinking, but in the halls of government. I hope that those people have more control over the follow-up legislation. I don't have a lot of faith in that. I think it's insane that she's being attacked by a bunch of Trump supporters who say that one of the reasons they supported Donald Trump was that they were sick of the way things were going. They wanted someone to come in and drain the swamp. She's speaking out against literally trillions of dollars being handed over to the wealthiest individuals and corporations in the country. And they're pissy about the tone she used while doing it.
Yeah.
Steve Mnuchin got trillions of dollars that he's going to hand out. And they still think that Trump is draining the swamp. Like, also, maybe he's soaking up the swamp with bills.
There's also like a carve out for people exactly like Jared Kushner and Donald Trump in terms of creating a tax haven for people who own real estate developments. Like, these are the things that are in there. Politico has an article called, let's see, it is called Who Got Special Deals in the Stimulus and Why They Got Them.
Yeah.
That's just all these things that I know that why happened. And they're hoping, they were like, all right, there's only 100 of us to get together and say this. Like, can we do this? Can we not? Meanwhile, they were, when in the House being different, the last bill, the second aid bill that was less a stimulus and more just like an aid bill that went through the House and Mnuchin first before going to the Senate and forcing them to do it, even though McConnell did everything he could possibly do to delay that vote, mm-hmm. there were 40 Republican Congress people who voted against that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, they are on record. That's all AOC was talking about beforehand. And what she's calling out people for right now is making sure that folks have an opportunity to go on record and say what they want in this bill and what they don't want in this bill.
It's Friday, and it's time to take out the garbage. Okay, Brett, it's that time. I don't know about you. Do you have your garbage? I have my garbage.
I don't. I mean, I have a trash can back here, but I'm like embarrassed that like there's so much crinkly plastic in it. Take out the liner.
I've got like a toner thing. No, it's that way it's easier to dump out. Don't liner shame me.
I'm going to make some crinkle sounds just to prep.
Okay, that's a garbage. Okay, so we didn't talk about who would go first, so why don't you go first this time?
I just had to get rid of some of the Jake. You're going to hear it on crinkle. You made this happen. It sounds like there's popcorn.
It's okay. Don't worry. So
stop
your
J. Crew bag.
Oh my God. J. Crew. Who's your garbage person, Brett?
This is a Jake. It is gonna
J.
be
Crew?
A lot. All right. No, it's Mitch McConnell. Mitchie Mixie is my garbage person of the week because nestled into this stimulus bill that he's trying to shame Democrats into submission on, that he wanted to get away with a slush fund. Not only did it originally have an unchecked slush fund in it, but now the version that he passed has a special exemption, I'm not making this up, for sunscreen manufactured in Kentucky. So
why would he have any special interest in sunscreen manufactured? Well, everyone does say that it's the sunscreen capital of the world.
According to Politico, one of the strangest provisions is sunscreen. Provision for the FDA to approve innovative sunscreens that happen to be made in Florence, Kentucky by L'Oreal appeared in the bill, which was steered in the Senate by Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. It's amazing that he's trying to convince Democrats or everyone that the Democrats are like, they're trying to drag their feet on this and they don't want to help Americans. This D-bag is like, maybe I can make it so that L'Oreal can do more animal testing before they move on with their sunscreen.
Yeah.
And it's like, and John, you want to hear my joke on this?
What's that?
SPF, more like SPWTF.
Pretty good. More like WTF.
Mine John, stop rewriting my
Mine
jokes.
Was quicker, you know?
I know. I spent a long time edit. Being like, SPWTF.
It's very good. Thank you.
It doesn't read. It's hard to
do. It works. Yeah, no, he's awful. You do now have to put your phone in your garbage, unfortunately. Oh, by the way, everybody, I know that this doesn't go in the regular garbage. I don't want to leave it out. I'm going to sort it eventually. But thank you for your environmentalism, which, by the way, EPA apparently not enforcing environmental regulations thanks to coronavirus.
I thought that would be the top story today.
Yeah, I thought about it. It's just there's so much every single day. Okay, so very much enjoyed yours. Let's transition to mine. Mine is going to be it's this individual. I don't know if you know who this is, but you're about to. Take a look at this. Yeah, that's an individual in a store licking all the deodorants. That'll show people who are concerned about shopping and getting coronavirus and they're staying inside because they're desperately afraid that they or their family is going to get sick. So this is the individual who did that. He's been identified. He's going to go in the trash here. But it's not really that one person that's the issue. It's how many people are doing something like that. So let me give you a couple. There was him in Walmart. He licked all the deodorants. There was a doctor in Storrs, Connecticut, where I went to college, purposefully coughed on patients as a joke. A doctor did that. An Amazon delivery driver was caught on video spitting on a package that he just delivered. And a woman in Pennsylvania in a supermarket purposefully coughed on a bunch of food that then had to be thrown away. It was $35,000 worth of food that she coughed on as a joke. And you've probably seen people joking about it on planes recently. All of these people, like, we're hoping that people will get together so much that they will run errands for older people in their area, help to reach out to make sure that people don't feel completely isolated during this, that maybe some of them, if they can sew, that they'll sew masks to help nurses who desperately need it. That's up here. We can't even get people to just sit here. Instead, they descend all the way down to, this is an opportunity for comedy. I'm going to start licking stuff, start coughing on stuff. We truly are the worst species.
Don't you get it? It's fun because people are in danger. Because people are scared. Like, I get it. I get you want some kind of comic relief. This is not funny. This is not funny. This is mean terribleness. This is you doing something so that you can go, I'm the best.
Yeah.
But no, no, you're not. You're the worst.
Yeah. And someone in the chat is pointing out that he was arrested for terroristic threats. I thought I had read something like that. But yeah, he's going to be in some trouble. And all so that he could get some more, I don't know, what are followers on TikTok calls? More talkers? More ticks.
Tickies.
I don't
know,
more tickies.
More ticks.
I don't know if it was on TikTok, but it's just
more
it's
Lyme
all
disease,
these people,
I think is what they're called.
Probably. And there was the woman who licked the toilet seat, the toilet seat in the plane or whatever that now has coronavirus. The people going to coronavirus parties and getting coronavirus. There's the hundreds of bars in New York City that are still apparently open, even though they're supposed to be shut down. All of these people that are going to undercut any reasonable effort to protect people from coronavirus. Like, as always, with the human species, we're trying to move that train of progress along, and there's going to be some percentage of the population holding onto the back and digging in their heels and trying to slow it down. And it's really frustrating in a time like this.
They got a death wish. It's like a very real thing where people are like, I don't know. Life is chaos. I want to do terrible things. And I don't know. It's what is it going to take for it to really sink into people that this is a real thing? I don't know.
1,000 deaths didn't do it. Maybe 10. Maybe 100. Maybe that'll do it.
But it's
know.
Like
some
there's
people
that
just
Eddie Izzard
burn.
Thing. It's like if, yeah. The Eddie Izzard thing. He's like, you know, it isn't impressive until it's a lot of people. And once the more people it gets, it's almost like, wow. What are you like? It should be way worse. It should be 1,000 deaths should be 1,000 times worse in your head than one death. But it's actually in the news. It's not like that. You can focus on one death and that can be tragic because then you get to learn like the specifics of it. But like, I guess his line is about Pol Pot killed 100,000 people. Wow. He must get up very early in the morning. Yeah. Like that's
it's
coronavirus. It's like, that's a statistic now. It's not any people.
Yeah, I'm hoping that at some point it'll reach a number where it'll wake people up. But eventually, if it moves far past that, it'll just be a statistic. I mean, you already have people like Candace Owens saying like, oh yeah, you know, 1,000 people have died or whatever. Do you know how many people die around the world every day? It's like, man, the pro-life movement didn't know that it'd be coming to this.
Right. Also, like, Chewbacca is a Wookiee. Like, okay.
If Chewbacca is a Wookiee, you must acquit, I guess. For weeks now, we've been tracking Donald Trump's response to the coronavirus, as well as the rest of the government scrambling to put something together to provide relief for millions of Americans who desperately need it. We go now to a man who has been tracking Donald Trump's actions for quite a while, and I'm very interested to find out what he thinks about the way Donald Trump is dealing with the situation. We go now to journalist, editor, and founder of DCReport.org, David K. Johnson. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Glad to be here, John.
We're always glad to have you here. I've been wondering now, as Donald Trump's sort of like the narrative, the way he's been speaking about coronavirus has been changing over the past few weeks. Before we get into what he's doing now, what do you think about that evolution, the way he's been talking about this pandemic from the beginning?
Well, Donald doesn't understand science, despite claiming to be, you know, the world's greatest expert on 23 subjects and knowing more about ISIS than the generals and being able to learn everything you need to know about nuclear missiles in 90 minutes. It's all a con. And so what you've seen with Donald is an effort by him to fit the facts to his preconceived notion of the world. And he's being managed by the people around him. You've seen Dr. Birx, for example, coming out and saying either today or yesterday how brilliant he is at understanding all the data and taking it in. She's trying to cope with him, and lives are on the line. And what it takes is people have to play to him the way the president of Ukraine has and the way governors have. Well, that's just how it is. People shouldn't die just because of his ego. But his handling of this from day one has reflected his utter and complete incompetence, because he's a con man. He's a flim-flam real estate promoter, not even a builder. And he spent his entire life cheating people and getting ahead because he never had to be held accountable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally understand. I saw the comment from Dr. Birx and I was appalled by it. Maybe she's trying to produce a better relationship with Trump than he apparently has with Dr. Fauci right now. There's apparently some increasing
good cop,
friction. What's that?
Good cop, moderate cop is probably the game there.
Exactly. So I get exactly what you're saying about, he's not particularly interested in science. He doesn't trust experts in general. But in this particular case, like, all of the authorities are saying there's a good chance that this is going to be absolutely devastating. And you would think that even for purely pragmatic reasons, he would want to get out in front of that to protect his reelection chances, if nothing else. Why do you think that he's not willing to do that, even if it would benefit him, electorally in the near future?
You're making an assumption, John, that would apply to almost all of us, but not to Donald. And that is that he can think strategically. Donald doesn't think strategically. He lives in the moment. He lives in what he imagines in the moment. And he doesn't think with any nuance about how to manage the future. And what a contrast from Barack Obama, who faced a totally hostile Congress and who was always thinking like a chess player, two or three moves ahead. Donald just doesn't do that. He reacts in the moment. And that's why you see him all over the place. Oh, yes, it's going to be a big crisis. No, it's all going to go away. Mm-hmm. He emotionally reacts in the moment.
And it seems like the way, like, we had 2 months maybe of it's all a hoax or don't worry about it. There was a period of what felt like about a week where he seemed to be taking it seriously. And then a few days ago, or around Saturday, Sunday, he switched back to, you know what, let's just restart this thing. Let's get this economy going, maybe Easter Sunday. Is that impatience? Is that, you know, he's been listening to Fox News and they're eager to try to turn around the way that the stock market has been moving. What do you think this turn can be attributed to?
Well, one of the things I've known about Donald for the last 32 years is that the last person he spoke to has the space in his brain. So I suspect that somebody on his staff, Peter Navarro, the economist who's way out over the ledge with the world of economics, Larry Kudlow, Jared Kushner, somebody has gotten some ideas into his head. Now, remember, Donald Trump hasn't shut down anything. It is governors and mayors and county executives who are issuing these orders. Trump hasn't even ordered the military to get its trucks and troops and deliver ventilators from military warehouses to the hospitals. At least I can't find any reports of that happening. So this change is simply his emotional responses to things. And what we're seeing is we have someone who does not know what to do. Donald couldn't get hired when he was a young man as an executive at any company. I don't think any of his children, the reason they work for him is no company would hire them. And there have been lots of people who teach in business schools. I used to teach in a graduate business school who can tell you that the things he displayed on his show, Apprentice and Celebrity Apprentice, no competent executive would behave the way he did.
You know, in terms of how he's been behaving, too, I've noticed just yesterday he was with Sean Hannity being interviewed. And so I worry that that might be that last voice that he might listen to. But he was he seemed pretty willing to attack both Governors Cuomo and Whitmer, even though he refused to name her. And it's perhaps no coincidence that these are blue state, you know, Democratic governors. And so some people are saying that one of the ways he's going to try to sort of contain some of the electoral damage that could be done by his response is to pitch this as a thing that if it gets bad, it got that way because Democratic governors aren't doing what's necessary.
Right.
Sort of a strategic calculation. Go ahead.
The approach. Yeah, it is the governors who messed up here. He's already made a few remarks along these lines. And he's also out pitching the idea that, you know, I alone can solve this, even though he's not. However, pay attention to this part, John. The latest Gallup poll shows his approval rating is up 8 points for the first time over 50%. These daily, not even briefings, these daily meetings in the White House press room that are being televised by Fox, CNN, CNBC, and others, those are helping him. They are helping him create an image. After all, how many people have ever studied management theory or public administration and have any idea what he should be doing? Mm-hmm. So he creates this appearance, and he's going to use it very effectively, and it's entirely possible that he will get a second term just because of this coronavirus, even if there are several million deaths.
Do you think that the media shouldn't be broadcasting these meetings?
I think we should cover them, but I don't think we should broadcast them live.
That's pretty much where I've landed, too. If there's something newsworthy, they can cover it. They don't have to unfiltered just aim that fire hose of stupidity and misinformation at the American public.
I also think some news organization, even though they're going to pay a price for it, some news organization needs to tell its reporter, ask the question you really want to ask, and really hammer him with it. One of the things Donald's always been successful at with almost everybody is getting away without answering questions. And I used to plot how to get Donald in a place where he couldn't get away or he had people in front of him and, you know, get him to answer questions he didn't want to answer. But nobody's doing that because they don't want to have their access cut off.
Yeah. I know that you've been tracking these new unemployment numbers that have come out recently. And even the official numbers that are released, which are obviously not final, are, you know, they're record-breaking, more than 3 million. But you believe that there's reason to believe that it's actually far worse than that.
That's right. Last week, the number that was reported was 4.5 times the record we saw in 1982 during Reagan's recession and in 2009 in the recession Barack Obama inherited from George W. Bush. But Pennsylvania reported 12% of all the unemployment claims. Well, less than 4% of the jobs in America are in Pennsylvania. So what that tells you is the actual number of people who tried to file claims but who couldn't get through on the phone or online or in person is much higher. Now, if you do the math, that puts us up at 13 to 15 million range. I don't think it's that high, but I do suspect we're going to see another 3 million plus this coming week. And we're on our way to 20% of people, that's 30 million jobs, going away temporarily. And by the way, that's Goldman Sachs's number as well. So it's not like something I picked out of a hat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 20% is a number that I've heard thrown around as well. And it would seem that if
we're
many
the
people...
We were
you get the credit. Yeah, everybody, they heard it here first or second after dcreport.org. So it would seem like if many people were trying to file for unemployment but unable to get through because of the glut, then in future reports over the next few weeks, you would have some of those people, but also people who newly lost their job as a result of the continuing economic problems. So that 3.3 record seems like it could be eclipsed potentially in the next few weeks.
It absolutely could. And there are many employers, you know, employers don't want to lose workers they have. You know, they may be saying, okay, we're going to let Joe go because he's not a very good performer, but they really want to hang on to most of their people. So I know of employers who are telling people, we're going to keep you as long as we can, and when we do have to let people go, we're going to do it by seniority. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see as the economy pulls back, and after all, people are not spending money. They're not going to the theater, to bars, restaurants, buying gasoline, driving their cars, getting new tires for their cars. You're going to see this drop in economic activity. The $2.2 trillion bill that Congress is finally going to put on the president's desk, it's just a down payment. We calculated about a week ago at DC Report that the minimum cost for an 18-month pandemic is $5 trillion. And those are conservative numbers because is doing investigative reporting, you always want the actual conditions to be worse than what you reported. But if it's 2 years, and that's what the German public health authorities say it will take, is 2 years, now you're north of $7 trillion that is going to be needed to keep the society afloat.
Hey, what do you think about next steps for the Senate? I mean, I've been pretty critical of a number of different parts of the current bill. Right. Where do you think we go from here once they finally get to a point where they can, you know, even vote, considering concerns over quarantines and all of that?
Well, first of all, the Senate and the House should both adopt a rule that you don't have to be in Washington because of emergency conditions. And we should have a rule like that anyway, because what if we had a nuclear bomb dropped in Washington or a dirty bomb? Why they didn't do this a long time ago is beyond me. But we need that rule. Members of Congress should not have to fly back home or be flown in military planes to take a vote. Secondly, what we're going to need is additional funding in the hands of ordinary people and money to nonprofits. Food pantries, for example, are facing new and extraordinary demands. And we're going to need to get help to them. And we also need the administration to do something I see no evidence of. About 5 million people every day put on an N95 mask. That means there are vast stores of them outside of hospitals. They're used by construction in certain areas, milling companies, people who do all sorts of industrial processes. The government should direct that you turn these over, and if it doesn't, should use the constitutional power of eminent domain to seize them. We have to pay for them. We have to pay for them. Nobody's going to complain about that. And Donald Trump needs to stop doing silly things like attacking General Motors, which made a deal with a maker of ventilators to manufacture them as quickly as they can at a plant in Indiana. And then Trump on Friday began attacking Mary Barra because he didn't like the price. Really, we're going to haggle over price when there are lives online? Yeah, that is how Donald Trump is. It's a great example of his inability to see anyone else as anything but an object. You and I are not people to him. He does not connect with you and I as people. I've seen this the 32 years I've known him. We are all objects to be used by him whatever way he wants. And that's a real problem, attacking a company that was moving to build. By the way, GM has said, we're confident we can sell these things. We're going to sell them at cost, and we're moving forward. So, that's the way they should be behaving.
Well, that is certainly good news. And finally, I would say one of the biggest concerns I have over the bailout bill that was just passed was that huge quantity of money that Steve Mnuchin is going to have sort of unilateral control over. I hope that organizations like yours, that journalists like you, are prepared for a couple of years of tracking down what's actually done with that money, you know, how it's divvied up. It seems like there is going to be like historic potential for corruption coming out of that bill that they just passed.
I think we're very likely to see taking care of friends. Donald Trump has to be in serious trouble. Jared Kushner's company, you know, is now in default on the old New York Times building where I worked for many years that they bought a portion of because they can't pay their debt. Donald's in the golf, hotel, and restaurant business, so he has no revenue coming in. But he should not, because he's president, get any benefit out of this. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to Donald. And we need to support various businesses, but there are ways to do it that are useful and ways that aren't. We don't want to lose Boeing, despite both coronavirus and their screw-ups on the 737 MAX, because it's the number one source of foreign earnings for the United States economy. But we also want to pay attention to how we distribute money. And there's one simple rule, and that should be if we cover your payroll, nobody gets more than, pick a number, $500,000, $1 million a year. If you're $1 million a year executive and don't have savings to live off of, gee, I'm sorry, that's too bad for you, given the condition of most Americans. I'm not suggesting that we should make, you know, a third-level vice presidents of a company get by on $600 a week. But you know, let's exclude these huge top pay and no stock buybacks at all. We need to go back to making stock buybacks market manipulation that's improper, and this is just the moment to do it.
I agree. David K. Johnson, always glad to have you on the show. This is certainly an important time for it, and so I hope that we can talk more in the future as this continues to develop.
Sure we can. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.